Okay, so in Parshas Kisetze, the Torah tells us, Leisira es shara chicha, ayeseya nidachim, v'salamta mehem. Don't see your friend's ox or his sheep that are lost, and you turn away from them. Hashev teshivim lachicha. If you see something that is owned by your friend and that it's lost from him, you have an obligation of Hashavas Aveda to go and return it. And let's say you don't know whose it belongs to, then you have to keep the sheep or the ox in your house. It has to remain with you until your friend comes and seeks it. And at that point, if he gives a simon, you have to return it. So that's basically the parsha of Hashavas Aveda in a nutshell. That we have an obligation when we find something to immediately return it. And if we don't know whose it is, then we have an obligation to hold on to it until the rightful owner produces a simon, and then you return it. We know that the Messiah is that the first Gemara that a child learns is, generally speaking, I don't know if this is the case by everybody in this room, but for many, many generations in Klal Yisrael, the minhag was to learn which parak first? Eilu Metzias. Every child learns Eilu Metzias. And it's an interesting story about this, and I gave a shmooze about it maybe 2 years ago.
In
Dara Golding? Oh, okay. Dara Golding, right. Yitzi and the Lost Drone, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so people listen. So Ramesha had a story. Ramesha Feinstein, his yeshiva in MTJ, in the Lower East Side, a bunch of rabbeim came and they sort of decided amongst themselves that instead of starting with Eilu Metzias, which is like a little bit hard to relate to for a young child, they thought maybe we'd start with brachas. And brachas is something that's, you know, easy, and a child, you know, you're teaching him how to make brachas anyways. This would be the obvious lima to learn with a child. And Ramesha got wind of this change in the curriculum that they were proposing, and he summoned all the rabbeim from the elementary school that were involved with this plan into his office, which is something that he rarely, if ever, did. And he said that there's not going to be any change in the curriculum from time immemorial. This is what we learn. This is the first thing, the first Gemara that a child learns is Perek Eilu Metzias. And he said the reason why is that when a person is taught from an early age how you cannot keep what doesn't belong to you, if something is not yours, you can't keep it, you can't use it, you can't touch it, you have to return it, that will hopefully plant a seed in a child's mind throughout his life that I have to be an ethical person. I have to be somebody that's erlich, that's yashristic, that has a certain sense of propriety in his business dealings. Otherwise, he says, kids will grow up and they think that finders, keepers, losers, weepers, and they make their own laws. And if I find something, I right away, you know, I can keep it. And, you know, if you're, and then it spreads to other financial improprieties. You start stealing and cutting corners and not paying taxes. And we want to create ethical Jews. We have to start from the inception. The first thing that you teach a child is Eilu Metzias Shelai Ve'Eilu Chayav V'Hachris. Some things you get to keep, but some things you got to announce. You have to be very careful with what you are keeping. I wanted to suggest something, and then I see that Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, I was mechavin to him. I was about to say he was mechavin to me, but that would not be nice. I was mechavin to him. And that is that when you start learning Eilu Metzias, you get tremendous emuna in Bias HaMashiach. Why? Because there are so many references to Eliyahu HaNavi. As soon as you begin the very first Amud of Eil Metzias, if those of you, you know, have, who have learned it recently or remember it, know that there's a whole bunch of questions about different ways of Avedas that were lost, and it was scattered, and it was scattered in a wide area or in a short area, and a lot of Sveikas piled one on top of another. And how does the Gemara end off? Like it does so often, Teku. That's the very first, and you know, and the Rebbe of course says that Teku stands for Tishbi, Yitaritz, Kushus, Vabayas, that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come. He's going to take care, he's going to answer all of our questions. We don't know the answer right now. When Eliyahu HaNavi comes, he's going to, that's to a child. I remember myself when, you know, what? Wow, Eliyahu HaNavi is actually going to come and he's going to answer the questions. And then if you learn a little weiter in the sugyas, and you know that the halacha is that the things that, if you find an aveda, you don't know who's the owner, what's the halacha? What do you do with that chefetz? Do you just like get to keep it after a while? No. Yehei munach. You have to keep it in your possession until Eliyahu HaNavi comes. All of these things are very much rooting emuna in the heart and mind of anyone that learns Eil Metzias. And when a young child, when that's the first thing that he is exposed to in Shas, the Perek of Eil Metzias, then it gives you like a very badly needed dose of emuna. Children are very, sometimes they get very cynical and skeptical. And if you learn with a child, there's a concept of Eliyahu HaNavi, Tishbi Yitaritz Kushus V'Abayis, Yeimunach HaTshiyav Eliyon. It's a constant reminder, a constant chorus of Eliyahu HaNavi throughout the whole parak. It teaches you a very foundational lesson in Emunah, and this is something that I believe might be an additional reason why we teach this to a child on the onset of his chinuch. Mayor just reminded me that I, and this whole chevra that I spoke about this, was it this year, Dora Golding, or last
this year?
This year. Past year, wow, okay.
All
right, okay, very good. That's a good, okay. So, the name of that shmooze, if you wanna, well, actually, it wouldn't be online, right? But maybe it was given.
It was given on Shabbos.
I know, but I think I did speak about it in previous years, maybe a few years ago. Anyway, I definitely told the story, and I think it's somewhere online, but I could be wrong. It was an amazing story, and it happened to me with my son, Yitzi, who's today, he's 9, but at the time he was probably closer to 6. So it was his birthday. His birthday is in the summer. And we were thinking, what should we get him? So we went to Amazing Savings, which is, of course, that's, you know, the smart place to go to get him something, and they were selling a drone, and you know, this is, I guess, drones, I don't know if they're so in today anymore as toys, but then it was like very spitz to get a drone. So my wife and I bought it for him, and we gift wrapped it, and then we gave it to him on his birthday. He was very excited about it. And we went near our house, like maybe a half a block away. There's a very big park with like an open baseball field, and it was empty. So Yitzi asked if we could take him to the park and he would, you know, play with the drone. I said, of course. So we went to the park, and like, you know, kids right away, like they know how to do everything already. With a 6-year-old, he's like already like zipping the, you know, the drone is flying and up and down and hovering. And I was like, wow, that's cool. And I look at Yitzi, I say, could I, you know, borrow it? If he'd said no, I would just like, I would grab it away anyway, so he had to say yes. So I took the remote, and I think he already like knew instinctively what was gonna happen. And anyway, so I was like, you know, it was going high, low, and then like I said, like, how high could this thing go? It's great. And like I made it go like really, really, really high. And then, like, I must have, like, made, like, a sharp left or a sharp right. And, like, veinenu. Like, the drone was nowhere to be seen. Like, literally, within 3 minutes out of the box, Tati already, like, lost the drone. It's gone. It could be anywhere. I'm telling you, the thing was, like, 150 feet high. And then it just, like, went completely out of, and I didn't know where it was. It was, like, it could be on top of any apartment building. It could be in anyone's backyard. And, like, Yitzi gave me that look. My wife, like, was there also. She gave me that look, and then she went home. There was, like, this Spanish man in the park, like an old Mexican guy, and he was watching this whole thing, and he also gave me that look. Anyway, so I said to Yitzi, you know, let's look for it, you know, and he's like rolling his eyes, and like, you know, we were going all around the block and looking under cars, and there's no, you know, it was like mamish gone. It was gone, gone, gone. He was like very depressed, and I was very depressed. We were saying like Tillim together, you know, like we were like making a Yom Asifa, Yom, you know, Kinnis Tshuva, something. We were like trying to do anything that we could think of to like get that stupid drone back into our hands. We came back to the park to look for it. Maybe something happened. And that old Mexican guy screams out, "Amigo!" And I said, "Yeah." So he pulls out the drone. It's mamish like, it was mamish not normal. I can't explain it. This drone could have been mamish on top of the Empire State Building. Like, that's how far it went. And he somehow got it. And I couldn't thank him enough. It was like mamish, like a burst of confidence in humanity. I don't know, it was like a really weird feeling. I ran home with Yitzi to get him like a present, like a reward. The only thing I could get him was there was a bottle of beer in my fridge for some reason, I don't know why. And I took it. I ran back to the park, and again, Veinena, he was gone. And I am convinced to this day that it was Eliyahu HaNavi. There's no way that that drone would come back to us. And that's basically the story, but I was trying to bring out the point that, you know, that Hashavas Aveda is really a mitzvah that is not only returning an object to you, but it returns your faith in humanity. When somebody brings you back your Aveda that you lost, and they could have taken it for themselves, it returns a lot more to you than just the mere Aveda itself. And that's... You want that to be a shmuz this week?
Not this week, I'm saying give back.
Yeah. There's definitely, you have to look a few years ago, I think, on Hashavas Aveda, I may have applied it, possibly. In any event, so let's see what Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky has to say on this very similar idea, I think. B'shaitai, kishalamadati ki yelad mesechas bav metziah. So Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, who was already an old man when he gave the shmuz, he said, years, when I was a little kid learning Maseches Bava Metzia, hishtaykakti kol kach limtzai eze zug mishkafayim yishanos naishanos. He says, I like craved looking, finding like an old beaten up pair of glasses. Ka'elu shiuban simon, the type that might have a simon on it. V'lo yilam taivim, and that wouldn't have people that would automatically be, you know, looking for it. The dinam shayu munachem atchevelio, with a din attached to it, that it's ye munach atchevelio, you have to keep it in your possession until Eliyahu HaNavi comes. Tishalu madua, you're probably wondering, why would you want an old beaten up pair of glasses in your possession, looking for its owner, waiting for its owner? Ma'asem grutoi satikasa, what would I do with those old spectacles? Aymer Lachem, so Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky is in his inimitable fashion says, Halei b'chol birchas mazin mevakshim anu, every time we bench, if you're saying the Arachamans, you say, Arachaman yishlach lanu, es Eliyahu HaNavi zocher latayv, vivaser lanu b'sayreis tayveis, Yeshua z'nechavis. Basically, we're asking to send Eliyahu HaNavi, kavtachas HaNavi. Hayyadim atem mayikra kishaliyah HaNavi. Now, we asked for Eliyahu HaNavi, do you know what would actually happen when Eliyahu HaNavi comes? Kol G'dayle Hadar yinaru elav yaftaru. First of all the G'dayle Hadar would stream towards him, and they would anoint him as like the king. He's like, he's the man. And they would ask him questions, lifshay tzvei kaseyim kushay seyim. They would stand online, all the G'daylim, Reb Chaim Kanievsky and all the Gedalei Yisrael, David Feinstein, all the Gedalei would ask him, stand on line to wait and ask him their kashas. Kim Amaram, Parsha Zu Asr Eliyahu LaDarsha, V'yam L'Chashiyah V'Eliyahu V'yayimar. In the Birchei Yosef about how Eliyahu Navi would be believed as far as halacha is concerned. Is that considered leba shamayim? We know that we don't paskin like shamayim. Is Eliyahu Navi, is he paskining b'tayrus somebody that's in this world? Is he in the other world? Okay, that's a whole discussion. Ukvar amru sheteku noitrikon tishbi etaretz koshes v'abayis. Now it's a little late. I want to skip the next three paragraphs. Uvechein, Elio Hanavi Yavai. So Elio Navi is gonna come. V'chal ha-gedaylam aitrimaisen, all the gedaylam will proclaim him king. He will be the Rosh Hashiva of the Dar, the Paisik of the Dar. Umisnatzchem belimud. Zekuken dinur nafkami papaya. There's going to be like flames of fire that's spitting out of his mouth, that's emitting from his mouth. Umipiv lapidim yalecho. And there's going to be torches that are coming out of his words. Vigamani artzalachsas vizipanim. So Rabbi Yaakov Glin says, I also would want to see this. I want to get up close and personal with Eliyahu Navi also. Because it's, it's quite a spectacle. Everybody, you need to get like a real VIP pass to be able to see Eliyahu Navi. Because Eliyahu Navi he's the man. He's the Gadol HaDar. You know, it's very hard to get to see Reb Chaim Kanievsky, right? You have to like stand online and then you get a bua and, you're done. But to get like a real, one-on-one yechidus with Reb Chaim Kanievsky, you have to really, have pull, but real pull. Imagine Alachas Kama V'Kama when Eliyahu Navi, reveals himself and all the Gedalim themselves are going to be standing online. So what are the chances that you and me are going to be able to get to see the face of Eliyahu Navi? Are we going to be able to converse with him, to get an in with him? How do we have pull? Eza Azus, Eza Chutzpah, Miata Yankala Kriniker. He's talking about himself. That was the way he was referred to, I guess, as a child in yeshiva. Nishma mufka chasar sika. There's no chance of me getting to see Eliyahu Navi. Very difficult to see Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi, by the way, does reveal himself to people in every dar. There are yechidim that get to see Gil Eliyahu even now. You have to be on a really, really high level to have the eyes to see Eliyahu Navi. There's a story that's told about the Chafetz Chaim and one of the Schwab brothers, Shimon Schwab from Washington Heights, the famous, Schwab on prayer, etc. So he had there were four Schwab sons and three of them were Mamish Gedolei Yisrael. Rav Shimon Schwab, he had a brother of Mardechai Schwab who was the Mashgiach in Yeshiva in Muncie. And then he had a brother of Moshe Schwab who was Mashgiach in Gateshead Yeshiva in England. These were like three mamish gedolim, like to come from one family, three amazing gedolim is very rare, obviously. One of Rav Schwab's brothers was waiting to see the Chafetz Chaim in his living room in Radin. And it was a packed living room. Everybody wanted to see the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim had his office, like let's say in the back of this living room. And people were waiting online to see him. All of a sudden, one of the Schwab brothers, who was a young, maybe he was 17, 18 years old at the time, he noticed that there was an old man that walked through this busy waiting room. And like the Chafetz Chaim immediately opened the door for him. And then the Chafetz Chaim, after spending some time with him, escorted him out. And then when this Rav Schwab had his turn with the Chafetz Chaim, he said to the Chafetz Chaim, who is that zaken that the Chafetz Chaim, that cut the line basically, went right in, and then the Chafetz Chaim escorted him out. And the Chafetz Chaim started like getting nervous. Chafetz Chaim says, you saw that? No one else in the waiting room noticed this except for him. He says, yeah, of course I saw it. He says, your eyes must be very holy because you got to see Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi, like, used to pay visits to the Chavetz Chaim in Radin, you know, 100 years ago. So this is something that happens, but like when that's Yechidim, but when Eliyahu Navi reveals himself in Mitzvah Hashem soon, then we're all going to theoretically have the chance of seeing him, but it's going to be very hard to get in because there's going to be a stampede of people that want to see the face of Eliyahu Navi. So he says, how am I going to get in? Aval oz eshleif zug mishkafayim yishanais neishanais. He says, you know what I'm going to do? That's when I'm going to whip out that old, beaten up, battered pair of glasses, Eitzer Menutzar, which was in my back, you know, storage room in my garage. Hein lekach mamtinais hein, at sheyav elio. They were waiting, at sheyav elio. Ve'ein breira, beginan yanichu li'lovei lefanav elachzais bezipanav. As a result of those little pair of glasses, I have my golden ticket to get into Eliyahu Navi. Because through those glasses, there's ein breira, the Gemara says, Tishbi Ataretz Kushes Uvayas. The Gemara says that if you find a pair of glasses and the Bailam don't show up, Yemuna Chachiav Eliyahu. Eliyahu Navi is going to have to deal with it. So I can get entry, says Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, straight into Eliyahu Navi because of that little cheap, nothing pair of glasses that I held on to. That will get me into Eliyahu Navi. He says, V'yadua, Sheva Brisk Haya Chazan Metiv Nagin. In Brisk, there was a Chazan that was he had a beautiful voice. The Yaiser Mishachaz Men Harab Mi Brisk Zatzal, more than even the Briskerov held of him as a Chazan, Achazhu Me'atzmai. He held of himself. He felt like he was really, really good. Upam Omar L'Rab Mi Brisk Begavas Rucha. He had a shtickle arrogance to him. He had somewhat of a gaiva to him. And he said to the Briskerov, Anu Aimrim by Shana Rabba, Kol Tzemach, Ish Tzemach Shemai, Pasuk in Zechariah, Hu David Ba'atzmai, Ish Tzemach is a reference to David HaMelech. So, Hu David Ba'atzmai, Mevaser Ba'aymer, the David HaMelech Nimzmir Sisraelu, Ainli Safik She'emana al B'nei Makelosa. He says, you know, I have such a gorgeous voice, says this Chazan. I have no doubt that when Mashiach comes and David HaMelech is back on the scene, and he was the Ne'im Zmir Yisrael. He was the sweet singer of Klal Yisrael. He had a beautiful voice, David HaMelech. David HaMelech is no doubt going to have a beautiful choir backing him up. And I'm going to be part of that choir. This is what he was convinced of, that I have such a gorgeous voice.
Anything that would go off a Levi.
Oh, very good. Nosen by Harab mi brisk enov. So the briskerov stared intently at him, Ba'amar, kishe David HaMelech yavoi, Tivrach mipanav merchak sholosh parsais. You know, we like to think that when David HaMelech comes, we're going to like go over, Shalom Aleichem. When David HaMelech comes, we're going to be like running, we're going to head for the hills. Why are we going to head for the hills? You know how frightening it would be to see David HaMelech? It would be frightening to see the Rambam. It would be frightening to see Rabbi Akiva Eiger. It would be frightening to see Rabbi Shlomo Hyman. It would be frightening to see Rav Moshe Feinstein. You know what the eyes that you have to be able to see, David HaMelech? It's not thinkable. Umesuper, Sheshalu Asagain mi Vilna Zatzal. They once asked the Vilna Gain, Manasem Tiptach Hadelas Vitana Kadosh Yikanet L'cheder. What would happen if there was a knock on the door, and one of the Tanam, any one of the Tanam, opens the door. You know, you open the door and it's Rabbi Gamliel. You open the door, it's Rabbi Eliezer. What would happen? So the Vilna Gaon says, Neneva Amar Manasseh, what would happen? Nisaref. We'd be burnt up alive. That's what would happen. We would be eviscerated. You can't stand in the presence of a Tanam. You can't stand in the presence of these malachim. They're srafim. They'll burn you up, not intentionally, but just by their kedusha. V'arav mipanovich zatzal amar li pam, Rabbi Yankov, the Panovich Rav once said to me, ani eini nival mikishleines, ve'eini nirish minefilais, sheva yipol tzadiv kam. He says, I'm not afraid of the things that I messed up in life. Or, you know, I'm not afraid of my sins, my stumblings, my mistakes, my errors, my iniquities. I'm not afraid of that because I'm human. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam, a tzadik falls down 7 times. He's resilient. You pop back up, you dust yourself off, you're good to go. That's not what I fear. Gam benefila begedei tzadiku. Hikri shor, you just got to get up. Don't worry about the fallings, just get up. Al tava me'acharecha ma'adava hava aval kishlein echad eini yachlis lech latzvi. There's one mistake that I made in my life. I'm not afraid about all the times that I did aver XYZ, but there was one time that I cannot forgive myself for something that I did. I messed up so royally that I can't forgive myself. I will never forgive myself. I can't. I have no menucha from this story. Chavetz Chaim once turned towards me. We know that the Panovich Rav was in the yeshiva. He was a Talmud of the Chavetz Chaim. They were very, very close. Of course, the Panovich Rav was the Rav that eventually became the Rav of Panovich, and then his whole community was killed out by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, and he somehow miraculously got to Eretz Yisrael, and he rebuilt Eretz Yisrael pretty much. He built Panovich Yeshiva, he built, you know, many of the other Yisaimim, Beis Yisaimim, and orphanages, and Beis Yaakovs, and many of the yeshivas that are in Eretz Yisrael are either from his Talmidim or his Talmidim's Talmidim. He basically changed the face of Eretz Yisrael. But when he was young, when he was a bachur, he was in Kailel, so the Chavetz Chaim turned to him one day, v'amar li, Mashiach oimed lavi v'chol rega. Mashiach could come at any second, data kayin. And you're a kayin, meaning the Panovich Rav was a kayin. Do you know anything about Avodas Beis HaBechira? If you know what mishmar you're in, the kayanim had like rotations. And if you know, let's say that you happen to have a, you know your yichas and you come from a certain Kohanic family, and your week of Avodah is, let's say this week of Parashat Kisetze is the week that if Mashiach would come and the Beis Hamikdash would be rebuilt very quickly, you would have to serve this week. This week you would not be allowed to drink wine. Every Parashat Kisetze. Why? Because if the Beis Hamikdash is built like that and you're drunk, you can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Shema Yavim Mashiach v'yimtza pasol la'avodah. Mashiach's going to come and you're going to be drunk. You can't serve, that's going to be very bad. If we're so cheshish that Mashiach will come, you're not allowed to drink, shouldn't you be proficient in the Hilchas Avodas Beis HaMikdash? What's going to happen? Mashiach is going to come. Imagine the scene. Mashiach is going to come, you're a kayin, and you're expected to paskin shailas. You're expected to know about Toman Taira. You're expected to know about which carbon is to bring, how to shecht a carbon, how to check a carbon, how to distribute a carbon, how to do zrika, how to do halacha, how to do haiva, all the avaydas you have to do. There's a million things. There's a whole seder of kachim, taras. You know, if you're not a bucky in this, then what's going to be? Who's going to pass in the shas when Mashiach comes? So the Chavetz Chaim says, you gotta learn. You gotta learn these halachas. So listen to what the Panovich Rav answered him. Yaldus Haisavi, he says, I had an immaturity to me. V'yonisi, and I answered, Rebbe, Ma Dimyan, what's the comparison? Hashikros, being drunk is psol hagufi. That's something that I understand why I would have to not drink this week. Because it's a psol in the goof. You can't get around that. If I'm drunk, I'm drunk. I won't be able to work. I won't be able to do the Aveda. So that's understandable. But you're comparing that to paskening halachas? Aval iyadiyas halachas mabakach. Why? Emad liyad harebi. I'll just stand right next to the Chavetz Chaim. Halagam harebi kayin. Because the Chavetz Chaim was, of course, also a kayin, right? They asked the Kamais, whatever you're doing, I'll do. I'll just follow suit. whatever you're doing avodah, you're doing, you know, zrika, I'll just stand right alongside you. You'll show the way. You're a baki in hilchas, in kachim. So what do I have to learn for? I'll have you with me. He says, I kill myself over how I had the chutzpah to answer that to the Chavetz Chaim. Eza azusi, what a tremendous chutzpah. Lachshev she'ani chuni b'vaya gula liyas b'samoch ha'chavetz chayim b'mechitzasek. Now the chutzpah that he saw is this is like a, you know, a twist. The chutzpah was not the fact that, like you and me would say, just time to say the Chavetz Chaim that I'll just follow you. The chutzpah was that I had the goal to say to the Chavetz Chaim when Mashiach comes, I'll be able to be aymed b'mechitzase, I'll be able to stand in your mechitzas. She'ezke shamler oisa, that I'll be able to see the face of the Chavetz Chaim when Mashiach comes. It's going to be a whole new world order. What we could get away with in this world, you're able to see certain people. This is what they said about the Leshem. The Leshem was the grandfather of Reb Eliashiv. His name was Reb Shlomo Eliashiv. He was the greatest Kabbalist of his time. He lived in the early 1900s. And the Chavetz Chaim used to say about him that if you have a chance to see the Leshem, you should see him. Because it's only in this world that you're going to get to see the Leshem. Because in Eilam Haba and Eilam Ha'emes, you won't be able to get anywhere near him. He's going to be on such an exalted plane that you're not, in this world, like you can get away with it. You can go and visit Reb Chaim Kanievsky. You think in Eilam Ha'emes or after Mashiach comes, you're going to just be able to walk, waltz over to Reb Chaim and get to shmooze in them. It's going to be, everything is going to be much more delineated. And so there are things that, you know, we have to understand about what Mashiach is, when it's going to look like when Mashiach comes, and how, you know, we, on one hand, it's geschmack to think about the days when Mashiach comes and Tchias HaMesim, but it's going to also be very scary. And we have to prepare ourselves for that, because if we're only if we're worthy, are we going to be able to see Eliyahu HaNavi? We're going to be able to see, you know, to see these great people, the Tanam, the Amiraim, the Rambam, the Rishayim, Achrayim. We're only going to be able to see that if we have certain eyes for this. I always tell my kids, and I think they need therapy from this, that, you know, on Seder night, you know, we always, you open the door by Shveich HaMascha, and everybody's like waiting to see Eliyahu HaNavi standing outside the door. And I ask my kids, does anyone see Eliyahu HaNavi? You know, we're all standing there by Shveich HaMascha. And, you know, they say no. I said, that's because we're using our eyes for things that are inappropriate. I said, if you want to see Eliyahu HaNavi, you have to make sure to, you know, we have to all clean up our eyes. We're looking at things constantly in real life and in virtual world that's not appropriate. And if we're people that would be able to like work a little bit on Shmiras Einayim, then we'll be able to be Zeicha someday to see Eliyahu HaNavi, to see all of the great Ga'inim and Gedailim of past, because our eyes will be functioning on that level. But if we're not, we're not going to be able to be Zeicha to see that. We have to be, you know, very, very, you know, and these are things that we all have to work on. This is something that's, you know, so important for us to try at least a little bit. Like maybe that would be a good Kabbalah for us to like work a little bit on our Shmiras Einayim, on what we're looking at and what we're not looking at. You know, it's very hard in this day and age to have real Shmiras Einayim, because it's all over the place. You know, it used to be that, you know, you have to look for certain things for it to be bad. Today, everything is, you know, you walk out the building and you see stuff that you shouldn't, and you go online for a second and there's 20 ads that pop up, and, you know, things that we shouldn't see. And, you know, it's the challenge of the generation to be able to try really hard to curb what we're looking at. But if you do, if you are able, if we're able to have Shmiras Einayim, the schar that we get for avoiding looking at stuff that we're not allowed to look at is something that's unfathomable. For all the great Tanaim, Amoraim that we spoke about tonight, they wish that they had our ability, because the schar that we get, because the Yetzer is so strong, the schar that we get is something, and this is not my own Torah, this is, I think, the Shlach Kodesh wrote it already back then. They can't fathom the schar that we have. They didn't have back then, in the times of the Rambam, in the times of the Rashba, in the times of the Tanaim, Amoraim. You think they had internet? You think they had smartphones? You think they had posters, billboards, Times Square, newspapers, magazines? They didn't have that. They didn't have the level of pritzas that we have walking down Main Street in the summer, or walking anywhere, or taking a train. They didn't have that. We do have that. So in a way, that's a terrible thing. But in a way, it gives us opportunities that to, if we are properly shomer ourselves, and it's an uphill battle, it's impossible almost, but if we're able to be miskaber over it in whatever which way, the schar that we get is unbelievable. Just merely, let's say, you know, you're walking down the street, the Musar Sfarim speak about this, you're walking down the street, let's say in the summer, and you see in the distance that there's somebody coming towards you, and person looks attractive and whatever, and your natural inclination is to look as they're getting closer. But let's say you don't look. Let's say you stop yourself and you either, you know, run in the other direction, or you just really close your eyes. The schar that you get for not looking is a schar that none of the Rishayim and Achrayim, Tanam, Amiram could ever get perhaps in their whole life. That's the flip side of the times that we're living in. If we're strong, we're able to miskaber over it, then we will be able to go up to Eliyahu Navi and with these eyes be able to see him and give the glasses and say, you know, Munach HaShiyav Eliyahu. We're going to be able to see all of the great Gedolim, David HaMelech and the Chafetz Chaim. We're going to be able to see them if we're able to restrain ourselves, hold back ourselves from looking. I used to have a friend who was very, very good with this, what we're talking about. He had very, very bad eyesight. He was like, you know, really thick glasses, like Mr. Magoo, if you know who that is. And, you know, like, you know, and whenever he walked on the main street, like, whenever, winter, summer, he was so mocked that he did not want to look at anyone. You know, he didn't want to see anything that he should not see. And he took his glasses off whenever he walked in the street. And, you know, so maybe, you know, if you or I took my glasses, I could probably still see pretty well, just not perfectly clearly. But he was literally saying Shalom Aleichem to mailboxes. You know, he was like bumping into bus stops and, you know, and like, you know, his mother, he passed like right by in the street. Like he literally couldn't see a thing, but that's what made him great. His greatness lay in the fact that he was so strong in this department. It's very hard to be strong. Now, the stories that I'm telling you are 30 years old, but you know, today it became very, very crazy. It's so hard. And we all need laptops, we need smartphones and internet and this and that. But if we're able to somehow, some way, like maybe make a chabura together and figure out ways to mechazik each other voluntarily, the schar, like Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you're like in. You know what I mean? Tomorrow morning I'm having that Had a Win in Din four-part series. You don't need that. You don't need to come tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in the fourth floor conference room. If all you have to do is just like be misgaber, make a chabura. There was a guy. There was a group of guys and ashrechem that our yeshiva had this. There was a group of roommates, and they were scared. They were pashut scared that, you know, they're in their room at night and they're alone and the internet and, you know, we know what you know, if you're in a funny mood, what that could bring. And what they did was they created a system that they could not access any page online unless there was a series of the other roommates putting their passwords in, you know, one after in succession of each other. So like if let's say you want to go into Google, you press Google, all of a sudden there's like a pop-up thing and, you know, and the roommates have to all be present. They have to put in their password one after another, and I think like every 10 minutes, a renewal of needing all the roommates to put their password in. And this is the extent that they went to protect themselves from seeing anything bad online. And, you know, maybe that's an extreme, maybe we feel that we're stronger than that, but maybe not. And, you know, this is something, if we really want to have the eyes, we want to be able to see when Mashiach comes, all the amazing sights and visions of that the Nevi'im describe, we have to purify our eyes. And the first step is to try to figure out, to make tachbulos, to make strategies in what the best way is to filter whatever we're seeing as best we can so that we're able to stand before the Rabbeinu Shalom and say, I tried my best.
Living might be, I have to go to stage for 10 days.